Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. Today, you're going to hear information you did not know. We have something that's unique. I suggest that you get the people that you care about to listen in because they'll find this of interest. From North Virginia, Wayne will be talking about information that may have given a lot of people a different perspective and hence a different outcome had they just known a more full story. I won't say anything more than that at this moment, but it's completely new information. In our health and nutrition segment today, why seniors don't eat. It's complicated. Creating a pomegranate drug to stem Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Why create a drug? We already have pomegranate. Oh, I forgot. You can't patent that. A shock, I guess, to those who don't know about GMOs, but genetically modified rice trial reports 300% higher leukemia risks. Wow. Train your brain to protect your mind. New study links cardiovascular health to cognitive changes as we age. Acrylamide, you hear me talk about it a lot. That's the browning of breads and pastas. Well, it increases in exposure that impairs the blood cerebrospinal fluid barrier function. In lay language, I'll tell you how that's not a good thing, and a lot more on health and healing. From our environmental segment today, from Indigenous Rising, more than 200 million people around the world denounce the corporate takeover of Ban Ki-moon's climate summit. It's a fraud. It's a farce. It is worthless. It is corrupt. But then again, everything at the UN is also under the influence, according to a high-ranking official who spoke to me personally, and said every single department, every single committee, every single study group, every single word that comes out of the UN has been vetted by the CIA. And no one at the UN will talk honestly on the telephone, do any kind of computer work, because they know every single person at the UN is being monitored by the CIA. Did you know that? Well, you see the results, this completely fraudulent effort they're making. So what are we the people doing? We the people are going to protest. And I'll get more into that later. The world's last remaining forest wilderness is at risk. Also today, to save the climate, we need to ban fracking. I'll give you all that. And also in the environment, the real reason Britain is freaking out about Scottish independence. No one has touched it in the media. We'll explore it. And if time permits, Chris Hedges, in a discussion about what is needed at this time in the area of social activism, and a short little segment from Dr. Thompson at the CDC, still there, on the record, talking about lying for his superiors. Now he's not going to do it anymore. So you can hear in his own words, because there's a very good possibility that based upon him receiving some awards and now getting the full attention of the CDC, that he may go back in the closet. So we want to have what he said in a moment of honesty being out. Let's begin. Acrylamide is what you get when you have toast, a muffin, a bagel, a donut, a pizza crust, a French fry. Common things in our diet. But it's not good. It speeds up the aging of the cell substantially. It causes massive inflammation inside your blood. And then the blood takes these inflammatory cytokines and prostaglandins, and that then spurs the development of massive amounts of free radicals, all of this then impacts the cell and causes inflammation. And that's how we age prematurely. That's how you end up with, let's say, joint pains and stiffness and diminishment of your brain power and destruction of your arteries and your heart and the development of cancer. So it's not a little issue. It's a big issue. It's one of the foundational issues of aging and disease. This is from Hybe United University, an article published in Neuroregeneration Research. Quote, "The blood-brain barrier prevents xenobiotics from entering the cerebral nervous system. Growing evidence indicates that neurotoxins," these are simply neurotoxins, "like nanoparticles, may disrupt the function of the blood-brain barrier and blood cerebrospinal fluid. Previous studies show that chronic acrylamide exposure," that there's your food, that's what happens after you eat toast or a hot dog bun or hamburger bun, that leads to peripheral neuropathy, and then it shows the specific ways that acrylamide ends up impacting the brain. This was done at the Hebei United University in China, and it damages all that. So, in lay language, what does it mean? It means that each time and every time, and with no exception, that you have any acrylamides, you are damaging your brain. No one is going to have a bagel or a piece of toast or a bun and end up with damaged brain. But it's not that we use anything one time. It becomes a daily part of our eating. And then at the 1,000th or 3,000th or 4,000th time that goes into our body, then we have accumulated so much damage that we manifest symptoms. So put a different way, by the time you see or feel or experience or can measure a symptom, you are at the end stage of a disease process, not the beginning. So all of American medicine, unfortunately, has missed this. They keep saying, let's get the cancer early. Let's get the heart disease early. Early to them is when a classical symptom can be defined, measured, and typed. That's the end of a disease, not the beginning. It may have taken 30 or 40 years to get to that point, but from there down, it's quick. So we should be on a national preventative program and understand that this causes advanced glycation processes. Remember, I've said many times, visualize putting a plump, moist chicken in the oven, and then 2 hours later take it out, it's brown and crisp. That is what happens to your cells when you take in acrylamides. Train your heart to protect your mind. From the University of Montreal, a new study links cardiovascular health to cognitive changes as we age. I'll quote this. Exercising to improve our cardiovascular strength may protect us from cognitive impairment as we age, according to a new study. And, quote, our body's arteries stiffen with age, and the vessel hardening is believed to begin in the aorta, the main vessel coming out of the heart, before reaching the brain. Indeed, the hardening may contribute to cognitive changes that occur during the same time frame. We found that older adults whose aortas were in a better condition and who had greater aerobic fitness performed better on a cognitive test. We therefore think that the preservation of vessels and their elasticity may be one of the mechanisms that enables exercise to slow cognitive aging. So, in lay language, what they're saying is this. For Americans who do not exercise aerobically on a regular basis, you're going to have stiffer veins. Now, what does that mean? Why should you be concerned? The veins won't stiffen on their own. Visualize a water hose that you just bought. It's flexible. You can fold it into loops and store it, but leave it out in the sun for a summer. And you go to pick it up, it doesn't bend. And it's got cracks in it. That's your arteries, when you have not taken care of them. How do we take care of our arteries? How do we prevent what they're trying to tell us? By exercising aerobically 6 days a week. Power walking, biking. If you play tennis vigorously for a couple hours, that's good. If you swim, that's good. But it has to be aerobic, and it has to be regular. Then eat foods that actually enhance the health of the epithelial tissues. At the top of the list would be grapes. Grapes are one of nature's most perfect foods. Pomegranate, a perfect food. And I would also put up there tart cherries, blueberries, and raspberries. Those are all superstars. Now, what they do is the polyphenols and different chemicals, phytochemicals, they actually go in and repair the damage. So let's say that earlier in life you weren't as conscious as you are now, so you did some things with your lifestyle that were not that wise, but okay, that was then, you've learned the lesson, now you're going to repair the damage. The more fruits and the more vegetables, the more seeds like sunflower seeds, chia seeds, pumpkin seeds that you consume, the more organic nut butters like walnut butter, almond butter, pistachio butter, cashew butter, macadamia nut butter, the healthier your arteries are going to be. The oils, coconut oil, great for your arteries. So, yes, we do damage ourselves, but no, we can reverse the damage. We can literally de-age the arteries. And therefore, we de-age the aorta. And therefore, we have healthier arteries. Now then, on top of that, go to even a higher enhancement. And the higher enhancement would be giving the cells, especially the heart and brain, extra energy. Give them the nutrients that enhance ATP, adenosine triphosphate, the actual combustion. Just visualize ATP as what happens when you light the fire and suddenly it comes out of the burner on your stoves. That's ATP that allows that to happen. What gives you ATP? What can enhance it? NADH, 20 milligrams. More mitochondria, PPQ, 10 milligrams. Coenzyme Q10, 100 to 500 or 1,000 milligrams, depending upon your condition and needs. Beet juice, an 8-ounce glass. Vitamin E from natural mixed tocopherols, 400 units twice a day. Tocotrienols, twice a day, generally 100 units. And then L-carnitine at 500 to 1,000 milligrams twice a day. L-carnosine, 500 to 2,000 milligrams a day. Now, there are other things that make a difference, including resveratrol, 100 milligrams a day. But that then ensures that you're helping thin out the blood to prevent strokes, rejuvenating the heart and the brain with more energy, helping enhancing the strength of the heart and cognition clarity in the brain, preventing amyloid plaques in the brain, which lead to Alzheimer's. But mind you, before you have the amyloid plaques and the diagnosis of Alzheimer's, you have amyloid buildup and dementia, and you have amyloid streaks and microstrokes and forgetfulness. I'm willing to bet that probably, I'm going to guess, 30% of the American population has had a microstroke before the age of 30. I'm willing to bet that people who consume alcohol on a regular basis, not to get drunk, but social drinking, they've probably had 300 or 400 or 500 microstrokes. And when you start forgetting stuff, and it comes after people get angry, so if you walk around angry, you're putting yourself at having micro strokes. Now, these are not the big strokes. These are not the ischemic strokes. where you have a blockage in the carotid artery and preventing blood and oxygen from getting to the brain, which damages the cells. This is the microstroke that happens where you don't go to the hospital, you are not incapacitated, but something is not right, and you begin to see a difference in your memory, sometimes your energy, sometimes your cognition, and you're unaware of it. Now, how do we know this? Because now that they're looking for it, they're finding these tiny little white, almost like flecks in the brain on autopsy. That's one of the symptoms of a micro stroke. Again, it's substantially less than a major stroke, and that's why we don't pay attention and have historically not looked at it. When you eat meat, when you're angry, when you drink alcohol, when you smoke, when you take a lot of medications, especially the antipsychotic medications, you put yourself at a higher risk of having microstrokes, and then that can lead to a major stroke. Next up, genetically modified rice trial reports 300% higher leukemia risk. This is from Natural Society, quote, "It appears that an alleged illegal genetically modified rice trial at the university students in China has led to an incidence of an increased rate of acute leukemia of up to 300% the normal rate in the country. Following the alleged GM rice trial, it was discovered from the Agriculture University that, quote, over 10 students now have leukemia within a four-year period. The students claim, quote, when we entered the university, the school required all students to promote genetically modified products upon entering the university. Our teacher told us that the rice used by our canteen is genetically modified rice from the university's experimental base," end quote. Now, normally, leukemia among young adults in China is about 2 cases per 100,000 people. In the case of the students claiming to be fed genetically modified rice to the university's base, the rate is at least 300% higher. 7 students are on record now as having developed the disease. Now, these accusations are corroborated by a study conducted by Brazilian researchers, one which showed that BT toxins found in genetically modified rice are toxic to the blood of mice and cause red blood cells to rupture. And this was published in a peer-reviewed journal. Quote, from the advisor of the Committee of Disaster History to the China Disaster Prevention Association suggests, quote, the Supreme People's Ministry of Public Security, the National People's Congress, and the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference should jointly organize a working team to enter the Agriculture University, investigate how this happened and who should be held accountable. I might mention that in China, they don't play games when it comes to punishing people who have committed crimes against their population. And where in our country, you'll never see the head of the FDA, except once I'm aware of, or the CDC being held accountable for what they do. And finally, a good report on Alzheimer's and pomegranate from the University of Huddersfield, and it says the following. A doctor's research looked at the relationship between pomegranate and Alzheimer's and the neuroinflammatory process and the fact that pomegranate can slow down the progression of Alzheimer's disease. So now, with all the studies on pomegranate and pomegranate concentrate, they're now saying we should do a drug on this, and it published the results in the Molecular Nutrition and Food Research. Okay, here are my thoughts on that. You did this with resveratrol. You've done it with special types of vitamin C. Now you're doing it with pomegranate. All you want to do is make a synthetic version of a natural occurring product, pomegranate, so you can sell it at outrageously profitable prices and then get it to where it's only allowed to be prescribed by doctors, and therefore a doctor could not be prescribing pomegranate or wouldn't prescribe it. And we wouldn't be allowed to hear any health claims about pomegranate anymore. That's how the game works. They game the system. However, the reality is that if you were to consume a pomegranate and the little orbs in it, the little seeds, put it into a smoothie, or take some pomegranate powder, which is good too, or pomegranate liquid concentrate, which is great, then you're getting more pomegranate's healing ingredients than you could in a medication without any of the side effects and with a very low cost. So when they find that something in grapes, resveratrol, is able to be patented and made into a drug for anti-aging, for your heart, for your brain, for your eyes, for your blood pressure, all of which it does, why not just eat the grapes? Drink the grape juice. You don't need the drug. There is no advantage. There are only disadvantages. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome you from all over the world, and I get emails from all over the world. We appreciate the input that you share with us, and especially when we look at the numbers of, we're syndicated all over the place, and one of the syndications is on our Pacifica station. Used to be on 3, but I'm not on the other 2 anymore. I chose to withdraw, and the one we're on, the average age is 70. And when we look at Bill O'Reilly on Fox, his average age is 72. And therefore, he has a more conservative and financially successful group of listeners. They tend to be more fundamental in their religious views. And therefore, you can understand why he takes the positions he does on every program. And that's true of almost all the other Fox shows. In fact, Megyn Kelly, who follows him, who can do some good interviews, by the way. I've seen her do some good interviews, but I also see extreme bias in other areas. Her average age is 70. What that tells us is that the mainstream media believes that the older population has more money, is more willing to spend it, and more loyal in their support. And though they'd like to have a younger audience, the younger audience today is far more critical, better educated, more hip on a lot of issues if they're in the media. If they're not in the media, they're not. They're clueless. But those that are paying attention, and they're bringing a lot to the table. The average age of the people visiting our Facebook and our website and listening in each day, 34-year-old, about equal between men and women, and 2.5 million per day. So we thank you, and we do pay attention to the issues, and that's why we take on the commentaries, the investigative reports, the original white papers, the guests that you haven't heard and seen everywhere else, and we'll continue to do that. Now today you're going to have a guest that you have not heard. You don't know this information, None of us knew this information. So when he brought it to us, we were surprised. We'll go to him in about 15 minutes. And what you're going to hear will surprise you. So that's all I'm going to say on that. But right now, I'm going to do a few items on the environment, and then we're going to hear from Chris Hedges and Dr. Thompson of the CDC. But first, according to Stephen Leahy of Interpress Service, the world's last remaining forest, wilderness, is at risk. This is from Canada. The world's last big forest is rapidly being lost. Quote, and much of this is taking place in Canada, not in Brazil or Indonesia, where deforestation has far made more headlines. A new satellite study revealed that since 2000, more than 104 million hectares of forest, by the way, that's an area that's three times the size of Germany, that gives you an idea how huge this is, has been destroyed or degraded. Quote, every 4 seconds, an area the size of a soccer field is lost. Every 4 seconds. The extent of this forest loss, which is clearly visible in satellite images taken in 2000 and 2013, is, quote, absolutely appalling and has a global impact because forests play a crucial role in regulating the climate. Now, why is this important? Why should we pay attention? Because the current level of deforestation is putting more CO2 into the atmosphere than all the world's cars, trucks, ships, and planes together. And that means that governments must take urgent action to protect intact forests by creating more protected areas, strengthening the rights of forest communities, and other measures, including convincing lumber, furniture manufacturers, and others to refuse to use products from virgin forest. Greenpeace is one of the several partners in the Intact Forest Landscapes Initiative, along with the University of Maryland World Resources Institute, and they use the satellite imagery technology to determine the location and extent of the world's last large undisturbed forest. The new study found that half of forest loss from deforestation and deregulation occurred in just three countries, Canada, Russia, and Brazil. And these countries are also home to about 65% of the world's remaining forest wilderness. However, despite all the media attention on deforestation in the Amazon forest and the forest of Indonesia, it is Canada that has been leading the world in forest loss for the last 14 years, with 21% of the entire global forest loss in the world. So, massive increases in oil sands and shale gas developments, as well as logging and road building, are the major cause of Canada's lost forests. So that's important. Now, to save the climate, we must ban fracking. And I want to share a short piece from Winona Hodder from Food and Water Watch. She says, fracking is an issue that touches on every aspect of our lives. The water we drink, the air we breathe, the health of our communities, and is also impacting the global climate on which we all depend. With the upcoming People's Climate March and United Nations Climate Summit in New York City, it is more important than ever that the climate effects of fracking are addressed. That is why today Food and Water Watch released the urgent case for a ban on fracking, with mounting evidence about the dangerous impacts of fracking and the immediacy of the impending climate crisis. And I have posted the entire article on our website, so you can inform yourself on that. And finally, from the Indigenous Rising, they say, quote, social movements representing more than 200 million people around the world denounce corporate takeover of Ban Ki-moon's climate summit, and then talk about what people should do so that they understand that what is being done at the UN is really controlled behind the scenes by major polluters, special interest groups. It does not represent anything other than, quote, the regime of the World Trade Organization, the people proposing the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the Transatlantic Trade Investment Partnership, and other bilateral regional agreements that seek to commodify all aspects of life and nature. So we will be protesting. And by the way, for those of you who have not come to the protest, and I want to thank the people in this audience who have. When we went to, with Chris Hedges and I, going against Bank of America, and we had almost 3,000 of the listeners of this audience, where we marched at Union Square and held hands and locked arms around Bank of America, thank you. For the 8,000 that marched to Washington, D.C. over a 10-year period, and we met in front of Lafayette Park, and I was in front of the White House. We were protesting there. Thank you for your taking that time to do it. For the 4,000 that joined us at the protest against nuclear power on the Hudson River, where we had Helicopter, we appreciate that. For the 3,000 that joined us in front of the governor's mansion in Manhattan, and the thousands up in Indian Point, when we went up there to protest, and those who came down across from the Javits Center about 6 months ago to protest the American Psychiatric Association, and for those that joined us, about 4,000 joined us in Union Square from this audience to protest against Monsanto and other GMO. So there have been a lot of people in this audience, thousands, who have protested. Just in the last year alone, we've had over 14 marches and demonstrations. This is a big one. Now, we won't be having all the speeches this time, but there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people marching. And then what I'm going to do is whoever wants, we're going to give out copies of Seeds of Death as a gift and some articles. If you'd like to go as a listener member of this station, we're going to go to the march from here at 10 a.m. on Sunday. So if you'd like to join me, where we go out and protest and march and give our support against the environmental polluters and make our messages important, then join me at 10 a.m. at 83rd, between 83rd and 84th and Broadway, where our studio is, where I'm broadcasting now. And then we will go to the march and we will participate in it. All right? And that's what we'll do. I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of you at 10 a.m. That's 10 a.m. at 83rd, between 83rd and 84th Street on Broadway, and then we'll participate in the march, hand out films, share information, see who else is out there, what information they have, I'll bring it back, and I'll analyze it and try to get some of them on the air over the next coming weeks to continue the cooperation, working together with other people. First up, we're going to hear from Chris Hedges. He has 15 minutes to tell us about how he believes he can start a revolution.
Thank you. Okay, I've got 15 minutes to start a revolution. I don't disagree with much of what Bernie Sanders said, but I think that it ignores the configurations of power, the corporate coup d'etat that's taken place, and that holds within its grasp all of the institutions that once made piecemeal and incremental reform possible, including the Democratic Party. But before I speak about those systems of power, I have to say a few words on behalf of the people of Gaza. Their suffering is not an abstraction to me. I was the Middle East bureau chief for the New York Times. I spent 7 years in the region. I speak Arabic, and for much of that time, I was in Gaza, including when it was being attacked by Israeli fighter jets and soldiers. I have stood in the morgue in Shifa Hospital, looking at the bodies, including the bodies of children, left behind by Israeli airstrikes and assaults, and I have watched mothers and fathers cradle their dead and bloodied boys and girls in their arms, convulsed by an indescribable grief, shrieking in pitiful cries to an indifferent universe. And in this charnel house, this open-air prison, where 1.8 million people, half of them children, live trapped in an Israeli ghetto, I have seen the crimes of occupation, the food shortages, the stifling overcrowding, the contaminated water, the lack of health services, the crippling poverty, the endemic unemployment, the fear, and the despair. And as I have witnessed this mass of human suffering, I have heard from the power elites in Jerusalem and in Washington the lies told to justify state terror. An impoverished, captive people that lack an army, a navy, an air force, mechanized units, drones, artillery, and any semblance of command and control do not pose a threat to Israel. And Israel's indiscriminate use of modern industrial weapons to kill hundreds of innocents, wound thousands more, and make tens of thousands of families homeless is not a war. It is state-sponsored terror and state-sponsored murder. And the abject failure by our political class to acknowledge this fact, a fact which to most of the rest of the world is obvious, exposes the awful banality of our political system, the cynical abandonment of the most vulnerable of the earth for campaign contributions. Money, after all, in corporate America, has replaced the vote. The abandonment of the people of Gaza is not tangential to our own political life. The pathetic, Stalinist-like plebiscite in the Senate, where all 100 of our senators trotted out like AIPAC wind-up dolls to cheer on the Israeli bombing of homes, apartment blocks, schools, where hundreds of terrified families were taking shelter, water treatment plants, power stations, hospitals, and of course boys playing soccer on a beach, exposes the abject surrender of our political class, both Democrats and Republicans, to cash-rich lobbying groups and corporate power. The people of Gaza, to these elites, are expendable because they are poor, they are powerless, and they have no money. Just like all the poor people in this country of color, whose bodies are locked in cages and whose imprisonment enrich the prison industrial complex. The danger is this. When you are willing to sacrifice the most vulnerable for political expediency, it becomes easy, as Barack Obama and the Democratic Party have amply illustrated, to sacrifice all who are vulnerable. Our own poor, workers, the sick, the elderly, students, and now, of course, our middle class. This is a Faustian compact. It ends by selling your soul to Goldman Sachs and ExxonMobil. It ends by deifying a military machine now largely beyond civilian control that, along with our own organs of state security, has established a surveillance and security state that makes us the most spied upon, eavesdropped, monitored, and photographed populace in human history. And it is impossible to describe yourself as free when you are constantly watched. This is the relationship of a master and a slave. Politics. If we take politics to mean the shaping and discussing of issues, concerns, and laws that foster the common good, we have to admit that this is no longer the business of our traditional political institutions, including the two major parties, the courts and the press. None of these institutions can be authentically called democratic, because they are used to crush all vestiges of civil life. All who call, as a traditional democracy does, on its citizens to share among all its members the benefits, sacrifices, and risks of a nation. These institutions offer only the facade of politics, along with elaborate choreographed spectacles filled with skillfully manufactured emotion and devoid of real political content. We have devolved into what Tocqueville feared, democratic despotism. The squabbles among our power elites, the rampant militarism, the disease of imperialism, which after all Bob La Follette denounced and fought, along with the mindless nationalism that characterized all political debate, has turned officially sanctioned politics into spectacle. Pundits and news celebrities on the airwaves engage in fevered speculation about whether the wife of a former president will run for office. And this, after the mediocre son of another president spent 8 years in the White House. This is not politics. It is gossip. Opinion polls, the staple of what serves as political reporting, are not politics. They are forms of social control. The use of billions of dollars to fund election campaigns and pay lobbyists to author legislation is not politics. It is legalized bribery. The insistence that austerity and economic rationality, rather than the welfare of the citizens, be the primary concerns of the government is not politics. It is the death of civic virtue. The government's system of wholesale surveillance, the militarization of police forces, along with a psychosis of permanent war and state-orchestrated fear of terrorism, are not politics.
Chris Hedges. Now we're going to shift gears and give you a very short minute and 15-second clip from Dr. William Thompson, currently at the CDC, who was one of the lead authors of a study that showed that there was no association between autism and the MMR vaccine, actually acknowledging there was. But then when we promoted that on this program and had the person that he spoke with and shared that information with, he has stayed quiet. This is one comment that he made that sets the record straight before he is withdrawn back into the CDC.
CDC is, they're paralyzed. The whole system is paralyzed right now. And the whole branch is paralyzed, and it's becoming more paralyzed. So there's less and less and less being done as the place just comes to a grinding halt. The CDC has put the research 10 years behind, all right? Mm-hmm. Because the CDC has not been transparent, we've missed 10 years of research because the CDC is so paralyzed right now by anything related to autism. Really what it needs is, you know, for Congress just to come in and, you know, say, give us the data and we're going to have an independent contractor do it and bring in the autism advocates and have them intimately involved in the studies. You know, I have a boss who's asking me to lie. You know, like if I were forced to testify or something like that, if it comes through legitimate channels and I'm forced to answer questions, I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I basically have stopped lying.
Dr. Thompson, you owe an enormous apology publicly to all of the children who became autistic because their parents believed that the MMR vaccine was safe. You knew it wasn't. You also, sir, allowed Dr. Andrew Wakefield and his research team to be destroyed in their reputations, lose their practice of medicine licenses in the United Kingdom because you had the proof and you withheld it. Now, I saw the email you wrote to Wakefield apologizing at this moment. That's fine, but why don't you go on national television? Why don't you go on Anderson Cooper, who vilified Wakefield, called him a fraud? Why don't you invite Dr. Gupta on from CNN and say, Wakefield was correct. The truth is, I'm the author of that study, and it showed a 354% increase in autism in African-American children under 36 months of age using the vaccine. That would be courageous. Let us now go to Northern Virginia and say hello to Wayne Madsen. Wayne is a Washington-based historical and investigative journalist. He has specialized in national security and national political issues. He's written for The Village Voice, Counterpunch, Corporate Watch, Multinational Monitor, and more. He is a regular contributor to Press TV and RTV and has appeared as a political and national security expert. He was a Navy lieutenant. He managed one of the first computerized security programs for the Armed Forces and later worked for the National Security Agency, the Naval Data Automation Command, the State Department, and among his many books is The National Security Surveillance, Reflections and Revelations, 2001-2013, as well as The Star and the Sword. His website is Wayne Madsen, M-A-D-S-E-N, report.com. Nice to have you with us, Wayne.
Hi, Gary. Good to be with you.
Good. We don't have a lot of time, but we'll go right to it. At a certain point, we may have to say goodbye to the syndicated audience, but you'll continue on to the top of the hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Here's the issue. You have come across research that, according to conversations we've had and our producer, Richard Gale, that you have stated that you can prove that Barack Obama was engaged with CIA front company prior to entering politics, specifically between the time of Occidental College and then Columbia University. Also, he worked for a group called the Business International Corporation, which is a known CIA front group. You also told us that his mother was associated with CIA and other political and U.S. intelligence agency concerns, as was his father and his grandmother. So take us on this journey, present your data and its proof, and lay your arguments out, please.
Well, let's start with Business International Corporation. This is the Manhattan-based company that Obama said he went to work for after he graduated from Columbia University in the early 80s. Now, what we know about Business International Corporation is that in 1977, two New York Times reporters, Joe Treister and John Crutzen, basically identified this company as a firm that employed journalists, but they were under CIA agents under cover of Business International Corporation and deployed around the world. We know that Obama edited a few newsletters for this particular company. It was located at One Dag Hammarskjöld Plaza, very close to the UN. Obviously, had a great interest in United Nations operations at the time. And we know that Business International Corporation was a leading CIA avenue to make approaches to the left wing, to the communist world. They sponsored seminars where just by basically snapping their fingers, they could get people like Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin at one of their seminars in Moscow, Marshal Tito in Belgrade, Fidel Castro in Havana, the communist boss Gomulka in Poland, and they were worldwide, not just the communist world, but also the non-aligned world. James Coonan wrote a book in the early 70s called The Strawberry Statement, where he said the Business International Corporation made an offer to fund SDS, Students for Democratic Society activities, in what city? Chicago. we know that Obama in his own book stated that he went to work for a company in Manhattan. He didn't identify the company. It's clearly it was the company, which is an appellation for the Central Intelligence Agency. When I stumbled across this, and I actually, you know, supported Obama. He wasn't my first choice in 08, but after I started looking at his connections to this firm, and then I was told by a senior person with the Democratic National Committee who worked, had to reveal the person was with the Hillary Clinton campaign, stated, when do you think Mr. Obama was talent spotted? And I stumbled across a document from the CIA training office that stated that 1978, they visited Occidental College, where he did 2 years as an undergrad in Los Angeles, and they found that the student body was very receptive to being recruited by the agency. 75 eager students showed up at a CIA recruiting seminar there. The person said, well, there was a little bit of a noisy crowd of Marxist students outside, but we recommend that we make further approaches to do recruiting in Occidental. Obama started there the very next year in 1979. And what did he get involved with? He got involved with the campus Marxist club. People said that at the time that he was kind of cool, not really, didn't sound like a committed Marxist, but obviously what we know about the FBI's COINTELPRO, normally these people who are planted in these operations aren't that committed. They're collecting information. Stanley Ann Dunham, in 1967, takes her young 7-year-old son, Barack, to Indonesia after one of the worst, bloodiest CIA coups 2 years prior against President Sukarno. It's estimated that as many as 1 million ethnic Chinese and suspected Communist Party members were massacred. Obama's stepfather at the time, Lolo Sotoro, was a lieutenant colonel in the Indonesian Armed Forces, and he helped the CIA General Suharto, overthrow the Sukarno government. And afterwards, he, of course, went to work for various oil companies. He was a member of the oil club, petroleum club in Jakarta, which was a known hangout for CIA individuals, and had close ties to all the Houston-based American oil companies. Grandmom Madeline Dunham, interesting person. She was the first female vice president of the Bank of Hawaii. I was told by people very familiar with the operations of that bank, and we get involved in a lot of situations back in the 70s and 80s with CIA banking activities in the Asia-Pacific region. There was a bank called the Nguyen Han Bank out of Australia that had branches all over the South Pacific, including Hawaii. There was a CIA fund company called Rewald, Dillingham, Wong, and a couple other names in Honolulu. But the Bank of Hawaii was basically laundering money for a lot of CIA-supported dictators in the Asia-Pacific region, including President Suharto, who was the dictator that ousted Sukarno, Chiang Kai-shek, Park Chung-hee in South Korea. His daughter, by the way, is now the president of South Korea, and various politicians in the Japanese Liberal Democratic Party. Slush funds, CIA well-known for operating these later on through banks like BCCI, Enron, so forth and so on. So it's not unusual to find the CIA involved in this type of activity. Grandfather, Stanley Armour Dunham, said to have been in the U.S. Army during World War II, came into France after D-Day, was supposedly a furniture salesman. But he traveled around from furniture store to furniture store, but either he couldn't hold down a job, but what I believe is that these furniture job the assignments were merely CIA cover. He went to work eventually for a furniture store called Pratt Furniture in Honolulu. That furniture store never existed as a brick-and-mortar operation. It was registered as a corporation with the state of Hawaii, but never actually existed. So what kind of furniture was this man actually selling? There's a photograph that appeared showing Stanley Armour Dunham, Madeline Dunham, and their young daughter, about 7 years old at the time, Stanley and Dunham, Obama's mother, in what apparently was Lebanon in the early 1950s, because young Stanley and Dunham is wearing a sash, a Catholic school that says Notre Dame de Jamour, NDJ, and that's a private school outside of Beirut.
Wayne, hold your thoughts, because we have to say goodbye to those stations that only carry first 55 minutes of our program. We thank you. The full interview will be on our website, and others can continue to listen on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. So we thank you. We look forward to our tomorrow's program. Continue, but I want you to focus back again. Here's my issue. My issue is this. I did a lot of research on Barack Obama when he was a candidate. I just wanted to see what he had been associated with. I found out that it was all front, that he was a community organizer in Chicago. I found out just the opposite, that he and a small group of people were organizing on behalf of getting some tenants out of places and on behalf of the developers, not the tenants. I found out that he was connected with David Axelrod, who was connected with the nuclear interests and the largest nuclear provider in the United States as a lobbyist. I found that he was associated with the coal companies, and hence someone came up with the idea of clean coal. So when he got into office, virtually all of the first 1,700 appointments were all pro-corporate, multinational, free market companies and people associated with them. In other words, they came from these companies. He said he wouldn't bring in the politics of the old. All he did was bring in Clinton and Bush's former top political people. He said he was going to have a new type of economics. He brought in, for his Council of Economic Advisors, Larry Summers, who was just, you can't get worse than Larry Summers when it comes to what he does on behalf of the public. But he was one of the architects of the destruction of the Glass-Steagall Act when he was Secretary of Treasury under Clinton and later president of Harvard, where he was asked to leave. But he was also one of the architects of the shock of the Russian free enterprise system that caused millions to go into dire poverty. So everyone who was a part of the problem was brought in. I do not believe that even the most naive politician would have done that, knowing that he had given so much support and received so much support from progressives and people who truly believed in the historic FDR type of Democrat liberal model. So is it possible that his affiliations, his early grooming, like Clinton was in Arkansas under Fulbright and Nelson and Winthrop Rockefeller, one of the Rockefeller brothers who was governor of Arkansas. Well, is it possible that Barack Obama was groomed by handlers inside the CIA working for this company? Is it possible? Do you have any evidence of that?
I think it's absolutely very possible. Now, there was a few books written, one by David Remnick, where he interviewed people who worked with Obama, some at Business International Corporation. Some said, well, we didn't really know it had any affiliation with the CIA, but we had the New York Times report that in 1977. And I think it's rather interesting that one of those reporters who worked on that story, John Crutzen, went to work at the Chicago Tribune later on, where David Axelrod was. And, you know, why didn't this information come out in the Tribune during the election campaign? No one mentioned the word Business International Corporation. I spoke to former members of the old Black Panther Party in Chicago, who told me, not the new one, because the new one is obviously some sort of a control mechanism, but the old Black Panther Party said, well, we remember Barry. Barry Obama came here, and he was parachuted in here, and they said, look, we were well aware of the FBI's COINTELPRO program, the counterintelligence program launched by J. Edgar Hoover, and they basically all, to everyone, to a person said to me, he was obviously planted here. We knew these agents. He wasn't the only one. They had some doubts also at the time about Louis Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam for the same reasons. But when you look at Obama's political career, you see one major candidate after another fall because of a release of sealed court documents about a divorce or a marital situation. The person who was supposed to win that election for the U.S. Senate in Illinois was a man named Blair Hall, a pretty wealthy, successful Chicago businessman. But somebody leaked out the files on Blair Hall and his wife's messy divorce, and that sunk the whole campaign. And Obama stepped in, and then Obama was going up against a young, very successful, photogenic Republican Senate candidate named Jack Ryan, who was actually had been married to a television star from Star Trek Voyager, Jerry Ryan, and they had a messy divorce, and the records were sealed, of course, and all of a sudden they were unsealed, and the information was leaked to the press. In both cases, the paper that published these leaked court documents with the Chicago Tribune, where David Axelrod had been for a number of years. I think Axelrod is key in this whole operation, and it's quite clear that Obama had a lot of help along the way, knocking out the opposition. But I have to also mention that a former U.S. ambassador, when he found out I was supporting Obama in 08, because I said, you know, I mean, he's not my first choice, but he said, you don't know what you're getting, and he stressed it, and he was very upset with me, and I knew that this former ambassador had a very close relationship with the CIA over his diplomatic career, and he said, you just don't understand, you don't know what you're getting, you don't, and it dawned on me afterwards what he was trying to say without giving away maybe some
Wayne, we're out of time. Wayne, we're out of time, and we've gone over time. We will set aside a progressive commentary hour for more in-depth analysis of this, but I thank you for at least sharing your research and what hopefully will now be a new investigation into these allegations. Thank you very much.
Good to be with you, Gary.
I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Let's now say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today, John McCain peeps Obama's plan for Syria, get ISIS and Assad, and Bloviator-in-Chief Al Sharpton bails on justice in the Michael Brown and Eric Garner cases.
Well, that's a surprise. All right, we look forward to hearing what you have to say. Utrice Lead right now.